This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Tech to the C on Enterprise. Good morning, I'm Frida Liu here. I've got the folks from Digital News Asia, Gautian Yu, Anusha Kandasivam, and of course, Karamjit Singh with me today. First, I know Tian Yu's got a story about the Malaysian fintech company SoftSpace, which is set to scale aggressively. So what are these fellas up to, Tian Yu?
Oh, basically, I mean, as for SoftSpace, I find the story is interesting for a few factors. First thing is that they raised 5 million USD, Series A. But behind that is actually that they actually raised the money about after 5 years being in operation.
Yeah.
So for many startups, you know, you tend to want to raise your Series A as early as possible. But they actually, I'm sure they want to raise it as early as possible. But actually, they took that time to build their business and to make sure that their business is sustainable.
And then the money will come.
Yes. Mm. So this is one good example of it.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
It's too rare we hear about things like that. So right. Interesting.
After 5 years. So these boys have done really well. I mean, we've interviewed them from the early days.
Yeah. And I think the point is that actually they're not a startup anymore. So we also, unless you want to disagree with Steve Blank, right, who's one of the leaders in the Silicon Valley, he coined the term also startup. And he actually says that, look, you are not a startup if you have found a sustainable business model. Because startups are companies which are in search of a sustainable business model. They've already found their business model. So I think we should, at least at the DNA, we should take the lead and stop calling some companies startups because they found their model.
But then again, startup is also meant that companies that have, you know, huge scale potential as
potential,
well.
Potential, yeah.
So this is an example.
Did they say what they're going to use the money for?
Yeah. Firstly, is to expand, expand their regional presence. So, not surprisingly, Indonesia is one of their targets.
Yep.
But surprisingly, Japan is their next target as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's not surprising.
Yeah, they're working with SoftBank.
Yeah, they're not SoftBank, but they're also, because the investor is
Transcosmos.
Interesting name, Transcosmos. It's a Japanese listed, right?
Yes.
E-commerce company.
Okay. Wow. So, and I guess, like, also when people make these announcements about I've raised so much money and everything, and what happened to the days when we don't have to tell people? You know, so I guess it's also a PR exercise where we've got this money and it's a good excuse to talk about their plans.
Talk about their plans and because they work with banks, correct? And unless they also branch out to insurance companies, and it's good for the bankers, right, to read about it, or the investors who said no and say, oh, really, they got these guys in? Okay, next round. So there are benefits to making the news known public. Although I suspect, even if you don't go public via the media, within the ecosystem, within the funding ecosystem, the word will get out that, you know, these guys, but just that they raise funding, not the added value of us talking about their, you know, their plans and their progress.
And then when you hear the story of a company being able to raise US 5 million, not ringgit, million
correct.
US dollars, it sort of says a lot about the company, you know, that there are, you know,
Okay, sorry, but he's got a few more things about them actually before I cut him off. Sorry, then you
The other thing is actually more on, you know, why Japan? I mean, one will be wondering why Japan, because first thing is that I think a few months ago they had a MOU with Mitsui, so whereby they're going to provide some of the services to the banking group. Oh. And with the partnership with Transcosmos, they can actually leverage on Transcosmos' strength in terms of maybe they can use them, they can get the help in terms of, you know, hiring talents and stuff to serve the Japanese market. Because if they go there alone by themselves, it will be very challenging.
It's very challenging because you are not Japanese.
Yeah.
Right?
So, starts just with that, right? Yeah. It's just a big barrier. But credit to them, man. They've worked really hard. Chiu Soon. And then our friend Christopher Leong, right?
Yes,
Christopher Leong,
Chris Leong.
Both childhood friends, and then, you know, Chiu Soon brought Chris in because, hey, you know, I need a solid business guy. Not Christopher brought Chiu Soon in. Chiu Soon brought Christopher in. And then Christopher cut his teeth at Cradle, right? He was one of the early members of Cradle, and he did an outstanding job there also in his early years. So it's good to see. It's nice when you follow a company from the beginning, then you see. So, because we also meet them casually in many occasions, right? So you know just the incredible hard work and the pain they're going through, right? For each customer win that builds up. And getting Japanese investors is not easy.
So
they will take their time, and this is a massive achievement for them. And it also now, I think, although I know a Thai fintech startup raised quite a bit more money, maybe like 17 million US last year. Yeah, but these, not putting them down, but SoftSpace has got a solid model with customers around the region and bank customers. So also shows that bank are embracing this space. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point actually a bank takes a stake in them in the next round, correct?
I won't be surprised.
You're going to be betting on the winner, I think. Of course, biased opinion, because I've known them for a while, but I think you could possibly be betting on the winner here, you know. They're not flashy. They just go out and get the business end done.
We've got a couple of nice Malaysian stories. So of course, you know, that's a nice Malaysian story, right? And in the telco space, Celcom had their quarterly financial results for 2017. How did that do? How did they do? And what's been happening in Celcom?
Well, I was kind of surprised in some sense because in Q4, they were actually, in terms of their postpaid subscriber base, they were like just maybe 10,000 subscribers behind Maxis. So we thought that, Celcom could be able to sustain the momentum and probably overtake Maxis in some sense.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen. So in Q1, Maxis grew their subscriber base, but Celcom suffered a loss in subscriber base in both postpaid and prepaid.
Right. So, I mean, they actually went down. The numbers went down.
Yeah, they went down. So despite you saying that, because I think both Maxis and Digi, they grew their base as well. So anyway, profits went down. That was not surprising. Revenue fell also. That was inconsistent. That was consistent with other players as well. So,
did they talk about next steps?
Oh yeah. Okay. As part of their plan to regain market share. So they said that first they said that they expect the business to be stabilized in Q2. And expect to see some upswing momentum in Q3 and Q4. So how are you going to do it? First, going back to basics, like, for example, building coverage, expanding the LTE coverage, the 4G coverage and all. And with that, they'll want to beef up their customer service so that they hope that with a good coverage and a good customer service, they could give consumer a good experience.
Did they mention customer service as a pertinent thing?
Yes. Because they were actually saying that telco in general, they admitted that telco in general were not known to be a good customer service so-called industry. So they, after the press conference, I was talking to the CEO. He was actually saying that he benchmarked himself against companies like Uber, because when you talk about, customer service in telco, usually if you take the best response, best experience and the worst experience, usually you get a neutral. Even themselves out. So, for companies like Uber, you usually get more good comments than negative comments. So that's what they're experiencing.
They're so experienced. So I mean, like, I've been using the same provider since 1998. And it's just like, not because...
How well do they know you, man?
Not well enough.
Really, yeah?
Right? And the thing is also, I'm not bothered to change. Because it's just like...
It's so easy to change. Is it? What's the word, Anusha? Laissez-faire. Towards this end, encourage them. They haven't paid a price for not acknowledging you
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's close to 20 years, right? And maybe, like, even the providers, right? Nothing has been so outstanding that I needed a change.
Have been hearing, because you've got, without naming names, right? Because some people obviously are just giving crazy data plans, and I've heard of friends, you should just, they don't say switch, but you should, look at the data plan from these guys, because, you can't use up your monthly quota also. And they've got now decent rollovers. So I've been hearing that of two players. It's kind of interesting.
Maybe I'm just old school. All right. I know you got a story on Fusionix. Maybe we'll discuss that after this. I'm here with Karimjit Singh, Goh Tien Yew, and Anusha Kannasivam from Digital News Asia. Stay tuned to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
It's Tech Talk on Enterprise, and it's also Tech Thursday. Go Tianyu, Anusha Kandasivam, and Karamjit Singh here. They're, of course, from Digital News Asia. Tianyu was sharing some stories about South Space and Cellcom a little earlier on. And now you have a story on FusionX, right? Another nice Malaysian story. What's this about?
There's actually two stories on it. I think this is one of the stuff where I don't have my notes with me, so everything is based on my memory.
You're making it up along the way. You go to Digital News Asia and read the article.
Tenyu is very methodical, like Edwin, so okay. Not like me.
The reason we don't have notes on it because it's not been written yet.
When will it be written?
We hope to publish the article over the next, say, 4 to 6 hours. So there are two things. First, let's start with the slightly not so pleasant news. The company's the chairman and two and a broker has resigned.
Okay.
Yes.
Chairman is
John Croft or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, correct.
So
Croft.
Yes. So of course, there are so many things that happened over the past 1 week. First, one of it is the chairman, the resignation of the chairman. And the other thing is that the company's share price has, fallen by about 70% during that period.
Hmm.
So, and at the same time, the company has announced that, they want to host an AGM to get the shareholders' approval to delist from the AIM's market in London Stock Exchange.
Okay.
So, I spoke to Ivan Tay, the founder of the company, to try to get more details on actually what's actually transpired. Mm-hmm. So I got all the details, but I'm still trying to weave out to organize those data and publish it.
So there's not been any good news.
That's just part one.
Yeah. Part one, okay.
Yes.
Part two, read the article.
That's part two, read it. No, the other thing is that here comes the good news. The company just launched a new product.
Mm-hmm.
I think today as we're speaking right now.
Mm.
So as you know, the company does big data analytics solutions. So it's kind of like a super powerful Excel spreadsheet kind of thing. So anyway, what it does is that you can help company to predict trends, to see how each department is performing, their sales, HR, and everything. So unlike those powerful analytic solutions, like say those Oracles and the SAP of the world, they claim that their product is much more easier to use, just simply drag and drop those data points and you get a beautiful chart already. So they did show that during the demo as well. But this new version, what makes it interesting is that it's like a Siri version of FusionX.
Okay.
Thing.
Right.
So you basically just need to talk to the computer and say, "Hey, show me sales figure." Then the number will appear. Show me sales figure divided by region. Then they'll tell you.
That's amazing,
I've seen.
Man.
I think SAP with this kind of they're attempting to do something as well. So and do you feel they've just launched the product? Is it
yes today?
All right, and they see that that's going to be a major game changer for them.
Yes, because they feel that it's a tool that is easy to deploy, easy to use. You don't need an IT expert to use it. Mm. Those CEO can use it. Without much IT background, they can use it easily.
Right.
And on top of that, they actually launched End, because Giant is the big product, End is a small product. So End will be a small scale of Giant, whereby they do almost the same thing with slightly less feature, but it's catered to the SME market.
Hmm. Okay. So, and I guess the constant thing that people will be saying, give me the sales figure. Give me the sales figure. That will probably be asked the most. So, Karan, nothing to add to this, huh?
No, it's just interesting. I mean, it's powerful, right? AI, everybody's using it, and the premise, you're using AI to deliver a better experience for your customers. Mm. So, I'm sure that telcos at some point are going to start talking about how they're embedding AI into their backend too, right? It's only a matter of time, and they've got the resources to do that. So, that's great for FusionX, which is, despite the corporate rumblings, is one of Malaysia's big data champions, and MDAG is betting big that they're going to grow bigger.
Will you be sort of reporting on why the people have left? They resigned. Will you be reporting on why?
Yes, that is something I'll be doing.
All
because
right.
it's big news after all. Because, you don't often see share prices fall by 70%.
No.
I mean, I'm sure. I mean, if I look at Ivan's, so-called, the shares that he owns in FusionX, today it's roughly worth about £10 million only. Okay. Only at one point, it's worth more than hundred right. million pounds.
Yeah, correct.
So I mean, and then of course, like why the chairman has resigned? You'll be talking about that as well.
I may not know why. Because at the end of the day, you need to find out from the chairman himself on why he leaves.
Okay.
So we'll try to get as many information as possible.
Watch this space. Okay. Now, Anusha, you went for Wild Digital, and on the second day was the Digital Free Trade Zone panel session. And a lot of people are massively curious about the DFTZ, right?
So massively.
massively curious, right? So what happened in the panel session? Any good news?
Well, yes and no, I would say.
One of those answers.
Yeah. Well, it's basically, okay, so Yasmin Mahmood, the CEO of MDEC, was on the panel, and she said that one of the biggest challenges that our digital economy faces is the fact that a lot of SMEs, especially those who are now in traditional businesses, are not on board with e-commerce. So one of the things is that the DFTZ can actually help SMEs get on board with e-commerce, but the problem is that there's a lot of trepidation from these SMEs. They don't really know what to make of the DFTZ, and they're kind of afraid that it will ruin their business, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's this it's sort of this vicious cycle. They're afraid of it, so they don't want to go.
Right. Yeah. When you talk about e-commerce, you're talking about, are we talking about buying and selling a product when you say e-commerce, or are you talking about e-business, as in just even getting themselves online?
Yes,
that's right. What you mean,
yes,
right?
That's what she was saying. Yeah.
Okay, so not just commerce.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's even getting themselves online. Right. Ganesh Bangal was also on the panel, and he said that there are so many SMEs that can actually get themselves online, and it will help their business, but they don't have the technology to do so.
Yeah.
They're too afraid of the technology, or they just don't know how to get the technology. Mm. But there's so many startups all around which can provide them this technology. And then he pointed out that he pointed out that one of the problems is that it's very difficult for the SMEs and startups to talk to each other because they don't speak the same language.
Because they're thinking it's a cost to them. Yeah. They don't see it as an investment, right? And then they to them it's like, what's my ROI? And the ROI may not be revenues, but the ROI could be, operational expenses reduced in the long term. So hence your profit margins will be higher. So it's very difficult. And a lot, I know like a lot of SMEs passing it on to the second generation as well. Yeah. So probably a second generation. A little bit more open.
They will definitely be open.
But they still have to wait for daddy's permission.
I don't know. Yeah, of course, right. Control the purse strings, right? And the final decision.
We've always been successful doing it this way. Yeah, why must we change? Mm.
But they're losing out because it's moving so fast. And Ganesh says that now it's not just e-commerce like we know. It's omni-channel e-commerce. That's what it's going to be right now. Mm. So if they don't get on board like right now, then they're just going to lose out.
You know, when we hear all these things, right? Do we want then, when you say SMEs, right? Do we want to then target industries to work on? You know what I mean? Rather than saying, SMEs, let's just focus on what is the big industry that could benefit from them. Then you work from industry to industry. Rather than making it so broad sweep. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the various industry bodies are working on this to some extent, right? Even, like, incidentally, one thing that caught the attention, because I wrote about the soft space investment in my week in review. And what struck me, Tenu, is that both Chris and the Transcosmos people were saying that they want to position themselves to help businesses become more digital. So even though, you think, soft space is in the fintech space, but yet they've got capability, they want to help, all traditional businesses to move and become more digital.
Yeah, because you were also at Wild Digital, right?
Yeah, okay. I was, yeah.
So, and you wrote a piece on it saying Southeast Asia is ripe for massive opportunities.
Yeah, well, it's actually, my week in review is an encapsulation of the interesting stories that the whole team writes. So this is just a story that Sharmila wrote, and she's not feeling so well today under the weather, but she wrote the story, and this is from Jungle Ventures, one of the partners there. His name, I'm not gonna, John something Gaudi lah, what was it, Gaudi, making me giddy now, David Gaudi, alright. So he just predicts that there's gonna be massive opportunity here for entrepreneurs in value creation, you know, it's kind of clumsy sentence there, but we're quoting him. Through digital businesses, specifically over the next 10 years in the region. Now, why in this region? One, he looks at the, you know, you've got a nice confluence of macro trends. One, which is the GDP growth. Then along with that, you've got a growing middle class, and that is, you cannot understate the impact of that, because growing middle class means you've got extra disposable, you know, spending power. And then you've got urbanization. I think in Malaysia, it's almost at 70%, and I was shocked at that. Wow, we've got almost 7 out of 10 Malaysians live in cities, you know. It's quite amazing. And then you've got young population. So that, again, the young population obviously are digital first generation, so they're more inclined, you know, to adopt digital products and services. So he said then you've got these good trends, then there are unique problems in the region, and this include unbanked and underbanked, right? You could be banked, but you could be
underbanked.
And then you've got logistical challenges too. So he said you put all these together and you add the third element, which is the most interesting, because he said this is that he observes that historically there are slow-moving traditional players have underinvested on digital, which means that the traditional players in the ecosystem are not investing enough in digital. And we at DNA see it all the time up close. So because of these three factors, that's why he says there's massive opportunity for value creation in this region. So it's quite interesting. I think, let me just stop at that for this, because do read the article by Shamila. It's quite interesting. And it had a lot of traction on LinkedIn, almost about 275, you know, shares and likes. And I don't normally talk about that here, but because the LinkedIn, you know, interaction, the article is so strong, so people are sharing it on that very, you know, business platform. So that also grabbed my attention. But one thing is also, he said there's still a gap in Series B. Not enough investors. There are investors in the ecosystem, there are more, we know of. But he said in Series B, there's still a gap there.
Right.
So that's interesting. And then just talking about Wild Digital as a conference, I think, and we've got a few stories from there. If you're interested to look at opportunity in the digital space, but you're afraid to act on your idea, that's the one conference you need to go for, because it will infuse you with a strong sense of self-belief that, hey, this can be done. And I want to work on, you know, the idea that I've been afraid of working on. I got to unleash it now, because you go there and you're just inspired.
Okay.
It's an amazing conference, not just from the content point, but from the, you know, the networking point too, right? Just a tier of people who go there for you to network with.
And so a venture capital firm, Gobi Partners, right, made an interesting announcement yesterday. They've exited from Malaysian beauty e-commerce site Hermo.
Yeah, so this is the point about e-commerce, right, growing in the region. And so Gobi Partners, together with MEFCAP, right, invested in this e-commerce company, and in Johor, they were based in Johor. Very interesting. You see, hardly hear of, you know, Ganesh is from Johor, but most of his time is spent in the Klang Valley, right? And this guy said they resisted, they wanted to remain there, and they got Gobi to invest in them in October 2015. And in the 1 year, I said the company achieved 300% year-on-year growth. And then they were actually talking to this Japanese, and the founder of Hermo, Ian Chua, was actually listed in Forbes as one of Forbes 30 under 30. In ASEAN in 26 last year. And then they have Crystal Horse. I somehow tend to want to think of them as Crazy Horse. They're 10 years laughing, you know. They were Crystal Horse Investments, which are actually owned by a Dutch entrepreneur. Some Dutch money is in there, but they're based out of Singapore. They've got a base in Malaysia now. And then Tan Sui Yong, a very low profile but very influential angel investor. Yeah. So they also were part of the Series A. But what was happening was this Japanese listed company is called iStyle. In e-commerce and it's in fashion, they were talking to them to be a strategic investor for the next round. But then according to one of Gobi's principals, Mok, oh God, man, I'm just, I should staple their names on my forehead. Yeah, Koo Kee Mok. So I always call them either Mok or K. So Koo Kee Mok, he said that when we were discussing with them to bring them in as a strategic investor, it suddenly actually we realized that it made sense just for them to acquire their entire stake. Because then the company wanted to run a lot faster, meaning the Japanese company, iStyle. And that's what happened then. So they, it doesn't say in terms of what amount, but they said 91% internal rate of return. So you already know, you can estimate they almost double, you know, the money that they put in. So, and how much they put in, I think it's in the article. You want to read the article, I won't tell you how much they invested in 2015. it's a good amount in millions, right, for a Malaysian e-commerce company. And it shows the potential. And this is what I like quickly. And this is the comment from JB Jamaluddin Bujang of MEFCAB. He says that, you know, this shows that for Malaysian startups, right, if it shows that you are understanding of the business you're in, you're hardworking and dedicated about providing good service, interesting, to your customers as Hermo does, you can go international.
And it's a good story because it's exited and you make money.
Exactly.
And you want to get lots of, where exit is not a bad word.
Yes, of course not. Yeah. Absolutely not.
And you exit, you make money and you
go. And so now for the Hermo guys, there's a lot of work to do and you've got a Japanese investor. Interesting, you've got Japanese investors in soft space and you've got Japanese investors in Hermo. And actually in a story that Anusha is going to talk about, which is in the e-commerce space, but in the delivery of that customer experience, there's also a Japanese investor.
It reminds me of that song, Turning Japanese. We'll have that conversation after this with Goh Tien Yu, Anusha Kanasivam, and Karamjit Singh from Digital News Asia. You're listening to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Bending fickle minds. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise. It's Tech Thursday. It's also Tech Talk. Digital News Asia is here. We have Anusha Kandasivam, Karamjit Singh, and Goh Tien Yu has left the building. Anusha, so we've been talking about e-commerce and Collect Co. Says they're making e-commerce convenient again. You mean what? Okay, it wasn't. Who are they and how easier have they made e-commerce? It's too easy already, as I think so.
So Collect Co is a collection service startup. So they basically are those people who run collection points for your parcels. Mm-hmm. And you can collect your stuff from there. You can even put your stuff there so that they can send it back. Return to sender.
Right.
Yeah, so the founder, Dylan Wong, he made this statement at the launch and he said, it is inconvenient to shop online, which of course I've shocked everybody.
including me.
So but basically what he was saying is that things go wrong a lot of the time. Yeah. So very often you find that your parcel isn't delivered to you and then you get the little, you know, that little piece of paper which says go and collect it whatever. And it's so inconvenient to go and you don't have time and you have to line up and all that.
The last mile.
Yes, anyway. The last mile, exactly. Mm. So that's why he says Collect Co is here to make it convenient again. So they have 800 collection points all over Peninsula Malaysia right now. They are going to open another 50 to 100 in East Malaysia by the end of the year. So...
Are they working with the convenience stores like your MyNews and 7-Eleven?
Yes, they have, let's see, MyDin, Sengheng, Caring Pharmacy, Happy Mart in Penang, a lot more. And they even work with those mom and pop stores as well. Yeah, so it's really convenient for you.
7-Eleven, no? Because 7-Eleven signed up with, I guess, I wonder if 7-Eleven was an exclusive deal with Zalora, right? Or Lazada. Lazada. Mm. I think they tied up exclusively with Lazada.
Well, Lazada is one of Collect Co's list. Okay, so they have Lazada, Zalora, Lelong.my, they have Hermo, Sally Fashion, all kinds of SMEs that there are e-commerce SMEs and things like that. Yeah, so they told me that they have 15,000 merchants.
I've never heard of them.
Yeah, they're really new. So they just launched, I think, last month officially, and they've been in operation for about 7 months.
7 months, which is good. Like what you just get the work done first, right? Build the foundation
and then talk.
Yeah.
If you've been buying stuff from Zalora recently, you can if you open the package, you know, you get all those invoices and everything. And there's also a little piece that says Collect Co, and there's a little sticker there that you can just.
Well, I haven't been shopping there. Obviously, you have.
I have. I got a parcel just before the launch, and I looked at it and thought, Collect Co.
But the interesting story about Collect Co also is that this young man's dad is David Wong. And a lot of your listeners will be if they're in the tech space, they will know David Wong was actually a one-time chairman of Picom, a past chairman of Picom.
I see.
And he was also the chairman of Outsourcing Malaysia OM, right, for about 8 years. So and he's been an entrepreneur for a long time. In fact, the first time ever a version of like Digirati 50 came out, which was then, I think, called the New Economy 50. When I was in my previous company, The Edge, we produced a New Economy 50 back in year 2000. Mm. David Wong was one of the 50 individuals we featured to say, watch this guy. And he was in the It was already in the internet space. I can't remember exactly what he's doing back then, right, because it's 17 years. But then he moved on and he was in logistics also. And he's got a company still today called S&T. It used to be called Ship and Track. Mm. It's now called S&T. And he brought in a Japanese investor into his business.
I see.
So that's why I say you got another Japanese element
Japanese,
there.
Huh?
And this was like about 10 years, so maybe 2007, 2006, he brought in this Japanese investor into his into his logistics company. So in hence, I think his son has off to a running start, you know, because dad, you can leverage on dad's network and credibility and just go boom, boom, boom. Interesting.
So 7 months old and they've got already 800 collection points, 15,000 merchants. So they recently got the CIP 500 funding from Cradle. And Nazreen Hassan was there at the launch, the CEO of Cradle. And he said, he told me that Cradle was really impressed by them because they've done so much in so little time.
Yeah.
They've got they can see a lot of potential there and a lot of scalability.
Yeah, so that's good.
CIP, so that's your tax money, right? Going behind a promising entrepreneur, and hopefully he succeeds and grows his business. And next time we can talk about them raising, a bigger round of funding, and then, you know, then they're employing people. Maybe not too many. Everybody's using software now, but still, you know, it's a growth company, right?
They want to have 10,000 collection points across ASEAN by 2020.
ASEAN, not
across
Malaysia.
Across ASEAN.
Wow. Yeah.
You don't talk just Malaysia. Too small with ASEAN. Yeah. So, and Karim now, Carousel is now tapping into AI for their buying and selling process.
Yeah. This, again, is interesting because the CTO was speaking actually at Lucas Ngoo. N-G-O-O.
Ngoo.
Not Goo, okay lah. Lucas Ngoo. So he's speaking at Wild Asia, and he was saying that, look, they wanted to create a new
Wild
user
digital,
experience.
Wild Asia.
Yeah. Sorry?
Wild Asia, Wild Digital.
Wild Digital.
Okay.
Did I say Wild Asia? Oh, sorry, that's the conference DNA is doing, like, in stealth mode. Sabo Patrick Grove. Okay, anyway. So he said they started 5 years ago, right? And then, and now you move 2017 with mobile first. Now they're going into AI first, right, to create a new experience for users. And he says that because users want the fastest process of selling and buying. And he says that with AI, it'll probably take from 30 seconds to 3 minutes. So it's something that they're focusing on now. So a lot of it is just that then, you know, background numbers on the company and all, but it's just important to show that, you know, some of the, especially startups, because you're nimble and you want to have an edge, right, in technology. You got no hierarchy infrastructure in place that you need to get approval from a CTO or CIO to do this. So you can just run with this. They're moving ahead with moving all, you know, embedding AI into the business. So you can read about exactly what features they're doing, and it'll be interesting story right there.
Okay, and moving along
not
to...
Not to talk too much.
Okay, not too much. Get him to read about it. And moving along to Smart City, there were 11 major announcements last night as Cyberjaya celebrated its 20th anniversary. Yeah. 20,
man. So huge, right? It's kind of fun to see our local companies moving along in this space, yeah? And Cyberjaya is actually branded as the first smart city in Malaysia too, correct? And they want to try to do stuff lah. You have to lah. And they, now, of course, they're claiming they want to be the model for smart city developments in the country. So, I mean, and it was an event big enough that you had the Prime Minister there also, right? You had MRCB, you know, Group MD there. Then you've got, of course, Tan Sri Irwan, you know, the point person for a lot of entrepreneurial ventures. And then you've got the CEO of Cyberview also, Farish Shahsyar there, and then Urbanwell being minister and all that. But yeah, there were so many announcements, right? Including an establishment of an R&D innovation hub. So, you know, for DNA, that's kind of important for us, right? An R&D and innovation hub. And we want to see how this will help in all these initiatives too, because Cyberjaya aims to be a global technology hub, and they had that vision from 3 years ago. You'll see their billboard saying, you know, global technology hub, and that's just a big, that's your BHA, your BAG, right? Big, hairy, audacious goal.
Yeah.
And this is, this gives them more wind, you know, in their tail. And you've got, you know, the government has always been behind Cyberjaya, so.
Yeah, obviously.
But now, in a way, the clock is also ticking for them because you've got added pressure. You've got, you know, Patrick Grove with his Kuala Lumpur Internet City, you know, coming up in 3 years' time.
Yeah.
So, and he wants to, you know, he says 1,000 startups, you know, to be based there. So, that's going to be a real challenge for Cyberjaya. So you've got a lot already going for you. Now, what do you do to run?
Faris is an
avid runner.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he started running faster in his morning runs around Cyberjaya.
No, I mean, you can say that it's competition. You can say, or you can say there's going to be just growth and abundance for everybody, right?
Yes,
and that's the so wherever you may be, there are opportunities. And that's what we should be moving towards, right?
And the government re-emphasizes that. Every time they do stuff like that, they say, look, we're pushing into the digital economy, right? You cannot move in. You actually got to run, you know, and seize the opportunities in the digital
economy. Pun intended.
And there's just so much opportunity there, but we've got to be there.
Even Bank Negara Malaysia is jumping on that.
Yeah.
They're calling
amazing,
ideas
right?
with
fintech hacks.
Great step forward, right?
Yeah, it's a great step forward. We wrote about it last week because we didn't have the show on, but today is Thursday. We wrote about it on Monday. And, you know, yesterday was the last day, actually. Oh, did we write about it last week? I can't remember now. But anyway, we wrote about it recently. And to get people to, the fintech hacks is coming up, so register. And actually, the midnight of last night was the closing date. But if some of you are listening and you're being galvanized, say, oh, shoot, man, I didn't know about this. I want to unearth my idea. It's very easy to fill out the Google form and you just submit it. And then maybe just send an appeal. Like you didn't know about it till now. You had your head in the sand or you were overseas, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worthwhile, you know, submitting an idea. And then from all those ideas, Bank Negara will actually look at them and pick an X number so that then they're going to be organizing a hackathon. End of the year. And that's, I think, something hugely exciting to look forward to.
I know, right?
And they're on the ball, right?
You have to be. You've got to be current.
You got to be current.
Right? You got to get their Bhangra together.
Yeah, did I say that? Sorry. I'm thinking of my Bhangra moves for wedding this weekend.
And Nokia is back.
They are back, man. Nokia, my first handphone brand, right?
Everybody,
is it? Everybody,
Maybe not Anusha.
Anusha?
Mine was this.
What
funny,
was yours?
Oh, yeah, it was. Okay, anyway. But everybody had one.
Yeah,
okay.
Everybody had one. It's just that they are back now, but the company that is using the brand is called HMD Global, right? Mm. And I think Jin is there, was there, lah. And they introduced a new lineup. You've got your smartphones, and they also actually introduced a retro phone, the rebirth of apparently it's iconic 3310.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know what that model is, so I get annoyed
with
all
these names. You see it,
is
you it know. That? Yeah, we've been talking about it for ages.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay. So they're here now, they've launched, and it's cool to see them, you know, back in the picture, right? Because my first phone was the Nokia, and I picked up the Nokia back then because Motorola was the market leader.
Yeah.
And I always tend to go for the number two or number three player if I want to get a product.
Right.
And I say, hey, okay, who are these guys? I didn't know they were from Finland. So I said, okay. And then ended up getting a phone, and my first phone was actually the banana phone. They actually had that banana phone.
But it's interesting. I would love to hear a comeback story because Nokia started their life as a fishing company.
Fishing and tire manufacturer.
So it's nice. I would love to just see a lovely comeback story with that one.
You would be. You come equipped. You've got fingerprint sensor and the latest security, right? It's just so important for all these phones. They've got all the specs are there, like your Corning glass. But just big picture is Nokia is back in the market, and those of you who have a sense of nostalgia and you want, you know, to get a Nokia phone which is up to date, of course it won't be an old phone, again, go and check it out, man.
All
and
right.
The prices are very cheap, huh? Not that I'm promoting it, just right now the models they release are all below ₱1,000. You can't go better than that, right?
Yeah,
fantastic.
Okay, we got no time for your reading list, so we just check out Digital News Asia. But I've got a source, so we've been talking about the Japanese, right? So we've got Tokyo Police Club up next. I've been speaking to Goh Tien Yu, Anusha Kandasivam, and Karmjit Singh from Digital News Asia. This is Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.